The 100 Years' War, the Gisclain period, Fall of Flanders, Part 2. Now, the Battle of Ryswick proved to be an equally fateful moment for the French. The defeat of Ghent was a severe setback to radical politicians in the French towns, who had emerged as the chief internal enemies of the monarchy. They had been counting on a French defeat in Flanders in order to pursue their campaign against war taxation. The outcome of the battle dashed their hopes and enabled the king's ministers to avenge all the humiliations of the past 2 years. About a third of the army was retained about the king after the rest had been disbanded. They accompanied him south across the plain of Picardy, making for Paris. On January the 11th, 1383, Charles VI and his uncles appeared outside the capital at Port de Saint-Denis with about 2,000 soldiers wearing full body armor arrayed in divisions as if for battle. The leading citizens had gathered outside the gates to receive them as tradition demanded. They were curtly ordered to return to their homes. The troops threw aside the chains and barriers across the gateway and marched in with drawn swords, led by the constable, the admiral, and two marshals. Detachments occupied the principal buildings, public places, and road crossings. This was not an operation of war. It was a political demonstration calculated to overawe the inhabitants of France's most intensely political city. Troops of soldiers passed through the streets, arresting all those who were thought to have organized or encouraged resistance to the new taxes of the previous year. The principal opposition politicians were taken to the cells of the Châtelet, where they found themselves rubbing shoulders with the mass of small-time agitators and others who had had the misfortune to provoke the grudges of the king's uncles. The proscriptions extended to the malcontents and demagogues, some of whom had last challenged the crown as long ago as 1358. The Parliament had tried to play a moderating role in the arguments, fell under special suspicion. One of its presidents was arrested, together with two prominent advocates. One of these was Jean de Meretz, advocate to three successive kings of France and counselor to the Duke of Anjou, who had aroused the ire of the Duke of Burgundy by speaking too well for the citizens of Paris during their negotiations with the government. The executions began on the following day. The first victims were two drapers and a jeweler. They were followed to the scaffold by intervals of a few days by groups of 6 to 8 victims at a time. Jean de Meretz was beheaded, in spite of the widespread sympathy which felt for him at the court. According to Froissart, he refused to express contrition for his acts, declaring that the scaffold that he had done nothing to deserve his fate. Several prisoners committed suicide in their cells before their time came. Meanwhile, the customary rituals of civic humiliation were put in hand. Principal gates of Paris were taken off their hinges and thrown to the ground. A section of wall was demolished by the Porte de Saint-Antoine. Nearby, the Bastille was redesigned to resist attack from the city side and provide royal forces with the means of entering the city even against its inhabitants' will. The chains that were traditionally piled up at street corners to be stretched across streets in time of trouble had become a symbol of the Parisians' possession of their own city. They were confiscated and carried off to Vincennes. Soldiers were billeted on the inhabitants. Each citizen was ordered to surrender his armor and weapons. On January the 17th, 1383, the king entered the great hall of the palace on the island to announce the suppression of most of the civic institutions of the capital. The offices of the provost of the merchants and the escheviens were abolished and their functions transferred to the king's provost. Masters of the city guilds and the quatrainaires and cinquainaires and decennaires who commanded citizen militia were dismissed. The activities of the religious confraternities, pillars of Paris's communal life, were indefinitely suspended. Heavy fines were levied on the prominent citizens, assessed at a level designed to pay the outstanding accounts of the captains who had fought in Flanders. The object of the repression was not just revenge, welcome as that was to the Duke of Burgundy, who had personally endured the pretensions of the Parisians in the spring of 1382. The government was determined to make taxation a royal prerogative, unfettered by any requirement of consent. A majority of the royal council had apparently objected to this policy, but the Duke of Burgundy and his aristocratic allies overruled them. It was the principal theme of the tremendous oration listing the sins of the Parisians, which was delivered by the Chancellor, Pierre de Hougomont, on March the 1st on the marble steps of the palace before a great crowd of citizens, one of every household of the city. Prime count in the charge against them was that they had refused to consent to the taxes required for the defense of the realm. Their refusal was now labeled treason. It would have been difficult to devise a more radical or explicit repudiation of the traditional consensual basis for royal taxation. The chancellor's recitation was followed by a characteristic piece of political theater, in which the royal princes fell on their knees to beg the child king to pardon his erring subjects. Charles pardoned them, but the chancellor had made the point which mattered that the king's officers were already acting on it. On January the 20th, 1383, the aides and the gabelle had been reimposed in Paris by royal proclamation at rates even higher than those previously in force. Proceedings were similar to those in Paris were conducted by special commissioners and local baileys in many of the major cities of the north. At Rouen, the king's officers arrived in March with a military escort commanded by the Admiral of France. 300 citizens were put out of their houses and thrown in the prisons. Those who were thought to have organized resistance to the taxes were summarily executed. At Amiens, an oligarchy of the richest citizens was given control of municipal institutions. Proscriptions and executions were ordered at Reims, Châlons, Troyes, and Sens. All places where riots had attended the government's attempt to collect war taxes in 1381 and 1382. The king himself presided over the punishments of Orléans for offenses against the crown and went back to the civil wars of 1350. All of these visitations were followed by ritual pardons, heavy fines, forced loans, and the reinstatement of the aides by royal proclamation. Languedoc did not have to wait long before meeting the same fate. There was no invasion of the south and no campaign of executions there, but the estates of Languedoc were summoned to Lyon in July 1383 to hear the king's commissioners announce the reimposition of the aides and the suppression of all self-governing consulates of the towns. Early in the following year, they recovered their consulates. They were made to submit to a fine of 800,000 francs for acts of rebellion, going back to the tax strikes of 1378. This enormous sum was equivalent to a hearth tax of 6 francs a year on every taxable household for the next 4 years, representing a crushing burden, made worse by the fact that its collection was concentrated in the handful of cities such as Toulouse and Carcassonne, which were thought to have bared most of the blame for recent opposition to the royal policies. The principle of taxation by royal command, which had never been quite acknowledged under Charles V, was now overtly established throughout the realm. Meetings of the Estates General in Languedoc became less frequent and more compliant. Those of Languedoil did not meet at all until 1413 and only infrequently thereafter. So that's what happens in Paris, in France, after the end of the revolt in, of course, Flanders. Next time we'll come back and see what's going on with the English and what in the world Bishop Despenser is doing. Now the sources for this, The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.